sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now from London is economist Stephanie Griffiths-Jones, who is currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University. She is the author of the new book, Time for a Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephanie Griffiths-Jones.
Hey, great to be with you again.
And, well, it's not the best circumstances, though, because it's one thing when economies crash for various reasons and, you know, economics has not been the most exact science, shall we say. But when things happen on the scale of what just happened in Italy and what's about to happen here in the United States in the next couple of days, where they seem to be completely self-inflicted financial wounds, that I find incomprehensible.
I think you're completely right. I mean, particularly in the U.S., I think the fact that the Republican Party doesn't want to reach agreement on a very reasonable proposal from the president is a totally self-inflicted wound, which could cause massive damage to the U.S. economy and indeed to the world economy. At the same time, in Europe, we have had, first of all, you know, very bad policies, this austerity policies that people like Joe Stiglitz and Paul Krugman have so rightly said are very negative. They're bad arithmetic, they ignore the lessons of history, and they're bad economics. And unfortunately, the reality has shown what has been said to be correct, and people are reacting, the electorate is reacting against those austerity policies, rightly, but unfortunately is choosing populist channels to do that. I mean, how can one explain that so many people in Italy voted for Berlusconi, who is not a serious politician, who has done so much damage to Italy? And even this movement by Pepe Grillo, which is interesting as a protest vote, I don't think has a clear alternative. And it's very unfortunate, I think, that the center-left, led by Bersani, didn't do better because it could have provided a kind of constructive alternative to austerity, a more growth-oriented alternative.
What do you make of the president's meeting on Friday with congressional leaders? I mean, that's the day that the sequester comes into play. So it's sort of a day short, but are they going to come up with anything, do you think?
Well, I very much hope so, that the rationality will prevail, because I think, you know, it would be amazing if they didn't take action. I mean, although I think the damage wouldn't be so great in the very short term, but it would really set the American economy in a very slippery slope. As to Europe, I think that there are alternatives. I mean, we've been working on alternatives. At the European level, you could have a pan-European initiative, for example, to promote growth. Institutions like the European Investment Bank, the structural funds, could be mobilized, and with little public money, you could actually have, at a pan-European level, measures to encourage investment and growth and employment. With calculated, you could easily generate, with the existing institutions, at least 1 million or 2 million jobs in Europe, which wouldn't solve the problem, but it would move in the right direction. Secondly, you know, Germany should slow down the crazy pace of fiscal consolidation that it is embarking on. It doesn't need to, having a big current account surplus, to have massive fiscal consolidation. And it could increase real wages. That would make, you know, Germans happier, they could have a better standard of living, and they would increase aggregate demand for the deficit countries. And similarly, the UK, there are a lot of studies that show that if there wasn't this self-imposed austerity that Mr. Osborne has provoked, you could have much better growth outcomes in the UK. So if you had Germany and the UK growing more, if you gave a bit more flexibility for the countries that are in deficit, I mean, if you allow them to have more gradual austerity, you could have an alternative Europe that would not have these crazy electoral results that could restart a process of growth rather than this process of austerity that offers no hope to people and that hits particularly poorer people so badly, as does the sequester in the United States, as would sequester in the United States.
Again, I'm speaking with economist Stephanie Griffiths-Jones, who was in London. She's currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University, and she's the author of the book Time for a Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis. So given that we have this extraordinary situation with Berlusconi doing so surprisingly well in this election, has created a kind of political stalemate in Europe's third largest economy. So it's not insignificant. And he ran so much against austerity, which is an irony. And then, of course, he also ran against Angela Merkel. What kind of bitterness is there between Merkel and Berlusconi? Surely there's some bad blood there.
Well, there is tension between the sort of so-called southern countries and the Germans, because they feel that Germany has been precisely imposing this pattern of austerity. There has been, of course, very strong protest votes previously in Greece, and the figures, I think, completely wrong, portraying Angela Merkel as neo-Nazi or something like that. But it's actually very paradoxical that this austerity and the crisis has actually increased divisions between, has sort of spurred nationalism and increased divisions within the European Union, when the whole idea of the European Union is never again the rise of nationalism. So I think the big fault of the German current government is that it has imposed this austerity. I mean, they have been quite generous in the rescue packages, but at the same time, they have done these rescues at the condition of continued austerity. Even the very good promise of intervention by Mario Draghi of offering to buy Italian and Spanish bonds if necessary, which has been up till today, very good in lowering spreads of those government's bonds, was also linked to their continuation of these austerity programs. And therefore, the whole kind of policy response is based on this dramatic austerity, both in the crisis countries, but even in the surplus countries. And it's the collective imposition of austerity in all European countries at the same time, which is, logically reinforcing this very negative evolution of the economies. I mean, if you think that in Spain, over half of young people are unemployed, as is the case in Greece. I mean, it is a completely unsustainable policy. And one would hope that finally, in countries like in Germany or the UK, people would understand that these policies are both economically wrong and politically unsustainable.
Well, Stephanie Griffiths-Jones, one would think that given the examples that you just gave, which are there for all to see, why is the Republicans in the House here in the United States about to set the U.S. on the path to austerity, given the calamitous evidence that's out there?
Well, I think it's completely irrational from an economic point of view. It's purely ideological. I think they just want to favor the richer segments of the society. And I think they have a basic misunderstanding of economics. And I don't understand how leading politicians of the largest economy in the world can take such completely irresponsible attitudes, unless they finally, at the last hour, hopefully, reach some kind of compromise. But I think this would also be a very unequal, not only would be a very bad crisis in the sense that it would lead to possibly a recession in the United States, but of course a lot of the cost of this sequester would be hitting the poor, because a lot of these entitlement programs like Social Security would have to suffer. So in that sense, one can understand that ideologically the Republicans are trying to do this, but they're doing it in a way that is completely brutal and is completely self-destructive. I mean, I think that ideology is driving them to completely irrational outcomes, even from their own perspective, which is quite scary.
Well, one of the heroes who tried to stop the 2008 crash, or at least warned about it well in advance, Sheila Bair, has an op-ed in Wednesday's New York Times, where she basically, and she makes it clear that she is a Republican.
Yes.
And says, you know, this is not my party. This is a party that only cares about the super rich. I mean, that's what's extraordinary, is the fealty to the billionaires that they all, the Republicans, particularly these Tea Party types who are supposed to be populists. That's what's so extraordinary, is how brazen they are. And the president still, I don't think, has managed to really draw the line there. He keeps referring to they only care about taking care of the wealthiest and don't care about the middle class. But now it's sort of disintegrated into a he said, she said kind of spat. And I think by and large, you know, an increasing majority of the American people are probably fed up with both parties.
Yes, but I think that the Republicans have this irresponsible attitude that they want the president to fail. They tried it last time, and they didn't succeed, and they didn't get elected. But they have both, you know, irrational, I think, wish to have the Democrats fail, and unashamedly, as you say, and as Sheila Bair said, are just trying to favor the ultra rich by massive tax cuts and so on, and they have no kind of, I would say, link with reality. Of the possible consequences of their action. So one would hope that in the end they will see some sense, but it's very scary that they should take things so much to the brink.
Well, the reality, though, is that we have a system, a political system, electoral system, I should say, a campaign system, based on money. So to that extent, what they're doing makes sense, because they're taking care of their billionaire patrons.
Exactly, because especially with the more recent changes in the law, this allows, as you know better than me, that the billionaires can dictate and can help create these crazy movements like the Tea Party, which has some popular support, but which are basically backed by money. I was just talking to a kind of friend of mine who's a very moderate Democrat, and she said, I'm embarrassed about my country because so many people repeat things, even on the media, that are completely false, and because they repeat it all the time, it sort of becomes a truth. So it's the control that they have of the electoral process and of the media, which has completely distorted the economic discussion. And the rational voices, like those of, again to name two, Stiglitz and Krugman, are you know, so clear, but they're not listened to enough.
So what is the discussion going on now in London and in European capitals about the American economy, given its important role and the idea that it has sort of gone from these manufactured crises from one to another? And the president has said that this is no way to govern a country from crisis to crisis, all of which are manufactured crises. And, of course, we'll have another one in March and then the debt ceiling later in the year. And it just goes on and on. What's the attitude that you get from your colleagues in the economics and the political world?
Well, in Europe, people are now this week focused much more, perhaps short-sightedly, but on Italy and the impact it will have on the European economy, because that is a major source of concern. I have been recently in Latin America and Mexico, and what is interesting there, but also in the rest of the developing world, in Asia and in Africa, I mean, people just don't understand what's happened to the leadership of the developed countries. Because luckily, at least for now, the developing countries are still growing. The IMF has projected they will grow by 5.5%. and people just don't understand what is irrationality. And that is a further deep irrationality, that Europe is so focused on itself and the U.S. is in the middle of this irrational discussion. But these are countries that need economies, that need to compete in the global marketplace. They need to compete with countries like China and India, who are pursuing, on the whole, you know, they may have their problems, but they're pursuing rational policies. They don't have these crazy policies. It's a luxury that the United States and Europe cannot afford, not just for its own economy, but also for its competitive position. For example, having a dysfunctional financial system, like in many ways we still have in the United States and Europe, because the proper regulation is still not kicked into place. Because there's always this pushback from vested interests. You know, it's completely inappropriate if we want to compete in this globalized economy. And on top of that, these crazy macroeconomic policies which are dragging down our economies, both in the U.S. and in Europe, are posing a massive burden. I mean, you know, we're not thinking about investing. We're not thinking about expanding universities. When you go to these developing countries, it's so refreshing. People are opening new universities, opening new science parks, thinking what areas to invest in. And we've forgotten that because, as you say, we're going from one crisis to another.
Well, Stephanie Griffith-Jones, I thank you so much for joining us here today from London.
It's a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with economist Stephanie Griffith-Jones, who is in London. She's currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University, and she's the author of the book Time for a Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graeme Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.